Hello, this is Brian Foster on Kardak Radio, presenting the program Spiritism and the Spirit World Around Us.
Hello, tonight, March 18th, 2018, another Sunday night. I'm here talking to you at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, all time zones in between and around the world. We are on Kardak Radio. Again, if you'd like to listen to Kardak Radio, you can either join the Facebook page for Kardak Radio. Just look at Facebook and look up Kardak Radio. Or on your Apple or Android device, go to the App Store or the Play Store. And you can just type in Kardak Radio. And it's a free app. You can listen to Kardak Radio 24 hours a day. And of course, everything we do is about Spiritism, and everything derives from this book. This is, you know, his like major book that he came. This is 1,019 questions about the spirit world. I could encourage everyone to look at this book. You can get it on PDF. If you go to my blog site, nwspiritism.com, and you click on his picture on the top right, you can go to the EDICEI bookstore. You can get his books. You can get books by Chico Xavier, Divaldo Franco, Yvonne Piera, and others. And anything that's in English, as far as Spiritist literature, you can find. You can also, of course, find everything I talk about so far on Amazon.com. But again, for Allan Kardec's books, you can buy his books, and they're actually cheaper on the bookstore in my website, on the link that goes to the EDICI bookstore, which is the book, the company that published all of Chico's books. But again, you can get them on PDF. So just type in Allan Kardec PDF, and you'll find places for it. And you can also type it into my blog, nwspiritism.com. And then in the little search, just type in PDF, and it'll give you lots of different hits on different documents that I've stored on PDF. You can also go to my Facebook site, Spiritism and the Spirit World Around Us. I have in the files section, people have put in PDF files on other spiritist literature. I also have my book, Spiritism 101, The Third Revelation. That's also on PDF in that book. On my blog, on the right-hand side, are all the books I've written. The books I've written, what I've tried to do is I've tried to take everything I've read from Allan Kardec and other spiritist authors and put those in different categories of information. The Case for Reincarnation, it's all about reincarnation, right? Everything I've read about reincarnation. Explore Your Destiny, all about the spirit universe. The Problem is the Solution is what I found out about, okay, what are the trials and tribulations we are going through. Why are we, right? Because they're really not trials and tribulations. They're educational opportunities, and other books that I've written. So hopefully these things would all be of interest to anybody who is exploring Spiritism literature in English. Now, what are we talking about tonight? It's very exciting. Now, I am going to go through in my book, Spirits in the Spirit Universe, Book 2 of Spiritism, The Spirit World Revealed to an Anglican Vicar. A vicar is a reverend. It's an English term that you use for the Episcopalian, as we call it here in the United States, or the Anglican Church, as they call it in England. Now, Reverend G. Val Owen was a fantastic person, and I first saw a hint of his name in the book Voltaire, and it's still not in English yet. I keep looking for it, but I saw him on the very last page. Actually, my wife said, "Look at this," and I saw his name in a meeting in the spirit world of people who are promoting spiritism. And then I got his books that he psychographed when he was in the physical world in the 1910s, 1920s, and a little bit of 1930s too, that he psychographed. So these are those books that I've done, and I've categorized these books. Oh, hello, Soul Souza. I've categorized these books into all different areas. And now what I'm talking about now is spirit education, the higher levels of heaven. Now, this is what I love about G.F. Allen's books, because what we've learned in Yvonne Piera, Chico Xavier has written more than 400, almost, you know, they keep publishing things after he's passed on. So there's almost like 500 books now. But what you've read in G. Val Owens books are all, you know, they're not repeats, they're supplementive. They add to the information we have about the workings of heaven. And I have never seen anything really describe what they mean as far as what we are doing, right? What's our job, right? In the books by Chico Xavier, they talk about, you know, in the Andre Luiz series, is Andre Luiz, you know, he has a job, he's working, he goes down on missions, he helps people on earth, he helps incarnates and discarnates in the umbrella, the lower level and the dark abyss. It's very fascinating. But what we see here from G. Val Owens is a lot of information on the higher levels of heaven. And so what we're finding is, you know, our future is so varied and so exciting to us that all of this information is brought to you so you can see for yourself how important it is to take advantage of your time on earth. So let's get to the point. So during many near-death experiences, people see bright angels, right? Sometimes only light, other times they can make out an outline of a clothing and a face. And these angels are residents of the higher levels of heaven. And higher, of course, being a relative term, only higher in the sense of their superiority to the levels of heaven below them. And beyond the 10th levels, I've said before in my other talks, are many more levels of which heretofore I've not yet seen explained in spiritist literature. There are hints, but nothing concrete. So the main dividing line between I've designated the kind of the higher levels, meaning up from the beginning levels to the 10th, to the next graduation of stages, which starting at the 11th level, that's where we're told in the books by G. Val Owens, is where the act of creation begins, is not yet distinct. Right? So we're not sure. But our knowledge is mostly absent above the 10th level of heaven. And of course, as I said before, this is an artificial numbering system that the spirits who talked to G. Val Owens said, we're going to use this numbering system. Not everybody uses it, but we're going to use it with all the different spirits that talk to you to be consistent. So therefore, while the line is fuzzy between the boundary of the lower and higher levels of heaven, all within sphere 1 to 10, I have tried to place the more advanced types of learning into this into my talks now into the higher level of action. So I kind of use the following filter. If a spirit is learning about one particular topic, as if in an undergraduate class is one of the criteria for the lower levels, or if there's an explicit statement that the class took place in one of the lower levels, then the series of communications to the G. Val Owens was included in the section concerning the lower levels, which I've had two episodes before. On the other hand, in the higher levels, learning usually brings together multiple concepts. And what should be taken from the many communications of spirits to the Reverend G. Val Owens is the tremendous organization and focus in building, staffing, and planning for students to matriculate through an extensive series of colleges, all created for the express purpose to launch the careers of spirits who can expand the universe. Now, when I state expand the universes, because the purpose of continually creating more spirits, educating them, directing the construction of new worlds, to educate and promote more spirits, I believe can only mean that there's more space to be filled, more work to do. If we were like a constant and the universe was static, why would you want more spirits? Why would you want to educate us, right? And if you're immortal as a spirit, why do you need more spirits? Why do you need more souls to help? So I believe what that means, and I could be wrong, and people please disagree with me if you feel that there's more universes, more dimensions, there's always more space to be filled, more work to do, more worlds and galaxies to form. Where all this ends and why is there an expansion, I have no idea, nor could I possibly understand it if told by our spirit. Of one thing I am certain, like the Earth was thousands of years ago, a relatively unexplored globe full of avenues for discovery and building new colonies, so must be the super universe wrought by our Creator. Have no fear of waiting for a job opening. So as you reach ever higher knowledge and power, positions are waiting open for your talents and dedication. So Let's talk about the whole structure of education in the spirit world. This is fascinating because what I'm talking about right now is your future, is the future of everybody on this planet. You are all going to go through this. So on Earth, there's a plan for our children that everybody knows. First, they go through nursery school, or start a kindergarten, then up through elementary to high school. And if the student is motivated or able, then on to college, which may entail multiple colleges and many years of study. Well, there is a process in the spirit world too. It consists of graduated steps, just like ours, except it lasts for all eternity. And I realize the last sentence could be frightening to those like me, right? Well, although I made it through school, I almost never enjoyed the experience. The good news is you don't have to go. The only limitation, not choosing additional education, is the inability to ascend to the next level. So you can park yourself on whatever level you decide. No one is forced to saying you have to go to this college. And if you don't pass, you're in trouble. There's none of that. It's free will. Free will is always respected in the spirit realm. And therefore, if you want to park yourself, you can park yourself on the umbral or the dark abyss. And, you know, of course, we've heard spirit world, there are people that have been there for 10,000 years. So you can park yourself. If you like level X, you can stay there for as long as you want. But the spirit Zabdiel reveals the process of education and ascending in book 2 of the book, The Life Beyond the Veil, called The Highlands of Heaven. And he tells the Reverend G. Valwin how at each level, smaller communities contain education centers to teach the newer residents of any level. Then, if a student desires, they journey on to a larger population center for more study. Now, doesn't that sound like how we work, right? Each little neighborhood has their elementary school, and their middle or junior high, however they call them. And then they go to the high school, and then there's colleges. Right. And then, you know, if you're on the very top level of your high school, might go to a further college, and then you may go to graduate school. So Zabdiel, in a previous communication, described a large heavenly city in the 10th level of heaven. And that city had a grand temple located on the hill. And in the message he sent to the Reverend G. Valwin on December 9th, 1913, Zabdiel reviewed the structure of education. So he was in the city on the 10th level, and Zabdiel was talking to the Reverend G. Valwin, and this is what he said. The temple shrine of what I spoke is not for worship alone, but for instruction of those competent to receive it. This is the high school of the sphere, and only those who have had passed through the lower forms may come here for their final learning. As various points in that region, there are other schools or colleges, each for some special class of instruction and wisdom, and some few for the coordination of some of these branches together. The city itself has 3 of these colleges, where those who have passed through what I will call the provincial schools come to learn the relative value of the various teachings they have received and combine them all together. In many spheres, this line is followed, but each sphere is both continuous and also in advance of the sphere inferior to itself, so that from the lower to the higher spheres, there is a graded system of progress, and every step onwards implies an added capability, not alone of power, but the enjoyment in the using of it. So think about that. This is extremely important, which I'm going to explain. In college, when we finish school, you know, we may get more knowledge. Doesn't mean we're smarter. It just means we're using our brain as we should. And we get a piece of paper, right? So you have graduated. He said, every step onward implies an added capability, not alone of power. And I have read in other places, and I'll probably go this in other talks, is that you're actually given more attributes. You're giving more power. You are physically, I should say, probably logically changed, because right, what are we in heaven? We're logical constructs, right? We're personalities, because thought is action in the spirit world. You are given more. It's as if you graduated from college and you were given 30% more strength, a bigger brain, and you probably grew 2 inches. That's really what we're talking about here. So this is in itself is a reason for you to self-motivate to do as well as you can, learn and study and read about Spiritism. Because you, as you rise into heaven, you're going to have power that we can't even understand. Because I'm sure what I'm trying to describe is woefully inadequate. So, if one considers each stage of heaven independently, their system of driving students from beginning to their education in small centers, then advancing the graduating class to major university hubs is similar to ours. And in our system, students are not obligated to graduate. They may change their minds. They stay where they are or travel to lower spheres if that is their desire. Whatever a detours a student takes, at some point, they will be motivated to once again begin the educational process. The signs of the joys of the higher levels are everywhere in the spirit realm. The system is designed to present to the population at any given level the attraction of advancing higher. Every time a region is visited by higher spirits, the pageantry of their arrival demonstrate what lies ahead. The constant message is this: there are rewards in focusing your energy in learning. The method is always the carrot, never the stick. A path is laid out of future possibilities. Spirits can see the rewards awaiting them. Hence, one reads about spirits creating difficult trials on earth with much suffering so they can purify themselves enough to climb to the next level. Why is that? Because they have seen in the spirit world what awaits them, and they want to remove those blemishes so they can attain that. Zabdiel also instructs us about the teachers that lead the classes. This is what he says. Instructors are mostly those who have qualified for the next sphere in advance, but who elect to stay in order to teach those who, in their turn, shall succeed them, when at length they go on into their proper place of abode. From time to time, these preceptors do make their journey into the sphere above and then return to continue their task, for they are enabled to bear its enhanced glory, while those who are of less degree are not able to do so. And also, there come once and again those of higher spheres into the lower for friendly intercourse and conversation with their fellows who teach there. And then they nearly always are willing to condition themselves according to the environment of that same lower sphere in order that they may impart some loving words of encouragement to the pupils. So what did he just tell us? What is pertinent and so unlike the majority of our teachers on earth is that all of the instructors have attained a position because they have actually been successful in the course they are teaching. In the schools on earth, one can always tell the difference between teachers teaching from theory and those teaching from experience. The quality of the classroom experience is in the vast majority of cases more pronounced and productive for the students. Nothing is more entertaining for the student than hearing this real life stories of a professor as part of a class. And at the same time, frequently unbeknownst to the listeners, valuable information is being disseminated. Those rare times when I have been privileged to be in a class led by one of those types of professors have been the most memorable and valuable. I also believe, for it has been hinted in various sections, that a student isn't obliged to be locked in classroom learning. There are missions to perform while in a class, and there are exercises to undertake. One may travel to different spheres, even to Earth, to facilitate an important task, all part of the broad educational experience. So, think for a second. Imagine studying what is of vital interest to you. Remember back to that one class you couldn't get enough of? Now you have a glimpse of what life in heaven could be. This is, after all, why you are here, why you are trekking through trial after trial, all to advance, to correct those blemishes which hold you back. Now, let's talk about like a high school in heaven. Let me give you more information. So there are spirits in heaven who, after passing away in the physical form at a very early age, are selected to grow up once again in the spirit realm. This is done to give them a new start, to rebuild their educational moral foundation with an improved character and attitude so that they may renew their quest for spiritual ascension free of past hindrances. As one may guess, just like on earth, they are full of mischief and merriment. And the spirit Arnel, and I just talked about Zabdiel, Arnel is another high spirit. He supplies a short interlude about his encounter with a group of young spirits at a fountain in the seventh level of heaven. So on a Tuesday, January 13th, 1920, the spirit Arnell told the Reverend G. Valwin about his walk with a group of fellow spirits about a set of gardens in the location in the seventh level of heaven that he was not yet familiar. So let me take a drink of water first, because and again, this is all from Spirits and the Spirit Universe, book two. And of course, as I said before, G. Bowen is following Spiritism. He never actually uses the word Spiritism, but everything I've done, I've not seen anything go against any of the doctrine of Spiritism. And that's why I read his book, because I saw his name as one of the purveyors of Spiritism, although he never called it that in the English-speaking world. And that was in the Spiritist, the book by Chico Xavier, Voltaire. But unfortunately, it has not yet been interpreted in English yet. So, Spirit Arnell, going through the garden, right? So, this is what he talked about, the garden. The crossway was walled on the left side as we went. On the right hand, when we had gone some little way, it was open to the gardens. The roof was supported by slight pillars of bronze and was of latest work. About this pergola climbed and blossomed beautiful climbing plants. But in the gardens were stretches of grass, flower borders, canals, and fountains. On the left, the wall continued and was of bronze, like the pillars, but paneled and embossed with beautiful designs. One large panel I noted especially. It was about 8 feet high and 20 long. It was a metalwork picture of a fountain in sphere 8. The picture was not still, as your pictures be, but all in motion. The waters flowed white from the fountain and fence went four ways. The four streams were severally blue, yellow, red, and green. And the country to which each flowed took on the character of its own fertilizing stream. The green river watered a country where then the chief lands were given the pasturage. Here were cottages and shepherds and farmers and their sheep and horses and cattle and all that goes to make up an ideal agricultural region. All these, you will note, had a semblance of life and motion. The apple orchard swayed to the breeze, and as I gazed upon the woodlands, I could hear the voices of the birds. Even the fleecy clouds moved across the sky and cast their shadows below upon the meadows. The blue stream fell from a high plateau into the ocean, and there were ships of all countries and of many periods, coracles, canoes, galleons, frigates, and liners. All these were in movement as the sea upon whose bosom they rode. The red stream went to a region of labor where men forged their energies of locomotion and of commerce, also of other mental instruments by which mankind has extended the use of his two hands by artificial substitutes of metalwork. Even this was beautiful, for the dominant note was light and fire, and the artist had treated the subject only from the viewpoint of progress. No instrument of war and destruction was here in the making. No drear ash hills, no uncomely waste of debris. In the picture, the idea was not self-interest, but the motive inherent throughout was a desire to serve the race. And because this was so, the artist was able to make the scene very beautiful also. The yellow stream went forth in space. Now you will wonder how that was pictured, and I fear I can give you but a poor idea of it. I repeat, all was not still, but in movement in these pictures. Now this stream, as it went forth, became transmuted first into spray, and then into mist, and then into light. But this was light in essence, in principle. It included within itself what you might call as night is suffused with sun rays, only they be not luminous to you as you look at them from the rear of them. As they stream out into space, you're looking in the same direction in which they are traveling. Only when you oppose your line of vision to the direction of their passage, when you stand on the side of the earth which faces sunward, do you say these rays are light giving. In that picture, the light rays were portrayed in all their aspects. The result was that we saw here the universe as we do, in fact, see it from the spirit side of life. There's no darkness, but only light in its different aspects and phases. And through these great depths of light and radiance, I could see the suns and their worlds upon their heavenly courses, moving in the majesty of their steady grace. It was very informing, as we are all of the themes in that picture, and I pause for some time that I might assimilate its meaning. So the large panel with the wondrous movable artwork foreshadows our future on Earth. And this is what he says. If men were adequately attuned to us, then the various activities on Earth would work out as here portrayed, even as the heavens do declare God his glory, which was the motive of the yellow or gold river of the panel. Mankind is coming that way, but it is far off the ideal yet. So what does that tell us? We haven't even been to the high school yet, but we're just into the beginning of the grounds. So it tells us that at every step, there's art and beauty in the heavenly spirit realms. Each is meant to soothe us as well as to educate. Perfection and form and function serves to remind each spirit of their potential and the latent goodness waiting to emerge from all spirits in inferior planes. We are told through many channels of what may come if only we work together for the well-being of all. Arnell revealed the symbolism and edifying scenes which await us on our ascension. So Arnell was a group of friends, and as he was taking his time to study the vast mental work, he fell behind his friends, and he began to walk onward along a pathway whereupon he heard voices and laughter. And he came to view a secluded enclosure through the hedges, and he spotted a lush green oval area with a fountain in the middle, about 45 yards in diameter, he said. Well-trimmed grass surrounded the fountain, and the fountain was level with its pool of water. And he saw his friends talking with some women. He heard the voices of men and women, which was natural. But he also detected the laughter and voices of children. He looked around, and he didn't see anyone who was an adult. And Arnell's friends cried out to him. This is what they said. "Arnell, my brother," said one of his friends, "here's a pretty to-do. These young ladies may have been guilty of a serious lapse from their duties. Maybe you've come to help them to amendment." And then Arnell said, "Joseph," I answered him, "he is one of our younger brothers. You give to me out of your own good heart so pleasant task as yourself. I warrant you would be very eagerly essay that you do not give as much merit for self-denial. I'll bet, Joseph, my son, these young ladies seem to me to be facing their troubles very bravely. What is your crime, my fair young sinners, even though Joseph cannot remedy, and which you also show such unusual signs of penance?" Then one of the maids ran forward and, placing her hand upon my arm, turned her pretty face to me full of mischief and said with a show of tearfulness, "Please you, sir, it is very grievous plight we've fallen into. We have lost the children." "What children they?" I said with mock severity. "The children we had in charge for. They were playing hereabouts after lessons. They are both good children and do not disobey. So we made them bounds. There's pleasance. We knew that they would not wander forth. Yet we have come and do not find them. Yet, as I came hither, I heard their voices very plain," I said. "That is true," she replied, "and so did we. But where be the children?" So he goes on. And he heard the children's laughter. And as you can see from the dialogue, people have fun in heaven. People have humor in heaven, right? These people are actually having a good time. And he could tell it. He could hear whispers from the fountain. And now again, he could hear a laugh. And so, you know, he goes, "Okay, let me try to figure this out." And so he looked in, he looked at the fountain, and he knew the place he was going to is what he would call a mixed high school. And the design of the fountain expressed one of their phases of studies. And it was made to represent a miniature hill clad in undergrowth and little forest trees amongst were ensconced groups of animals and birds. And so he came closer, and he looked, and he could see the names of most of the animals, but he said, you know, the animals weren't done as well as the other parts of the fountain. And some of them were kind of grotesque and not, you know, badly created. And he says, "I knew," he said, "I knew that such bad work doesn't exist in Sphere 7. So then as we're sitting there looking at, and then he heard like terrible roar come out of like the mouth of an alligator. And then he said, "Okay, there's five of you in there." And then Joseph came to him. He said, "Yeah, there's five over there." And then then before he could say any more, the children inside those stone marks, they started making the growls of the tigers and the alligators and all the different, you know, the elephants, all the different animals that were there. And he said that these children, a party of between 100 and 50, and they were reckoned on their earth years about from 10 to 16 or thereabouts, boys and girls together. And if he said at this age, if children have exceptional ability, they're advanced enough to begin the more intricate creative course of study. So they're teaching these high school kids how to create with their minds. So in other words, and having been taught in the lower schools, the creative principles relate relative to the grasses and trees and flowers and fruits, they proceed to apply their learning to the animal world. So he goes and he hears all this. And it's just very interesting. So, you know, he knows that somehow the students hid themselves in the fountain. And I wanted to go through this and kind of explain the whole scene, because I think it's important is to convey the happiness, the tone, the love, the kindness, and the interplay between two groups of strangers, right? This group that Arno, with the women who were their teachers, you know, immediately they were, you know, happy. They were teasing each other. I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, that's kind of like our, you know, what we think of a wonderful small village where everybody knows each other and everybody's nice to each other. You know, this is heaven. So, you know, it's like a close family where mutual support is given. The heavenly spheres and the spirit world consistently demonstrates respect and camaraderie amongst all of its citizens. Admiration and politeness is all the rule, not the exception. And this shows you the power of the law of affinity, where people of like-mindedness are gathered together. Showers those who have invested their time and effort in their personal ascension with untold benefits. They are able to live with the same love and fraternity that they themselves practice. They are given the pleasure to reside in a location of harmony and love. Heaven could not be better defined. On the other hand, think of the opposite locations. By looking at this level of heaven, you're actually understanding every place else better. The levels below heaven, which reach down to the core of the earth, whereas in the higher planes, love is pervasive in the dark abyss. The absence of love dims and hardens everything, manner of speech, relationship between strangers, between friends, and expectations with meeting strangers. There, all is fraught with danger. But this, you know, this book just gives you so much to look at. So now, children, I know to many people, and in the books by Chico Xavier, they talk about children in heaven, but I'm sure a lot of people, it sounds incongruent in heaven. And if we are immortal souls, how can there be children in heaven? And I believe the answer lies in the spirit realm's quest to give us opportunities for improvement. While I have not read any certain description of why there are children in heaven, I have discerned through the literature that has been published from the spirit realm that resetting a spirit back to a previous starting point is one more tool that is used to allow each of us to find our path to the light. If a soul has traveled through multiple lives, accumulating worse instead of better characteristics, then like rebooting your laptop or device, it frees the core to become functioning again by discarding accumulated unwanted attributes. The basic foundation of character still present, the potential for intelligence, sense of humor, playfulness, and capacity for love, all still remains. Only the years of built-up grievances, tormenting experiences, and plans for revenge against false enemies are deleted, never to rise again, hopefully. So hence, souls who were sent to earth, who were destined to live short lives, were most probably there with the aim, now some of them were on missions, but I'd say many of them were the aim to reshape their character, were given the gift of rebirth in the spirit realm, where we see tragedy in the short life of the child on earth. There actually may be a divine gift, a chance to begin again, to relive and rebrand as a more capable and complete individual. And there's one more benefit, the joy of seeing children in heaven, the immense pleasure of feeling the newness, wonderment, and love of a child. In our human experience, where we look upon children as joys to behold most of the time, imagine life in the spirit realm without that delight. So in the last two paragraphs where Arnell described the children learning, he referenced creative methods and creative course of study. He was actually describing the ongoing discovery of every spirit in heaven of how to harness their minds to build, to construct, and to conjure, to make what is in their minds by the force of their wills and intellect via manipulation of universal fluids into the object of what they desire. And so then Arnell describes how they put what they learn. So this now he's describing, okay, this is what the children did. This is what they learned in this high school, right, between 10 and 16. This is what he said. Here, they have formed a bold grand scheme and had immediately put it into execution. It was no less than the dematerialization of the whole fountain and the recreation of it with themselves inside the animals. The first part off went grandly, for they're well skilled in practice. But when their task of reconstruction came, they found they had forgotten one difficulty. They would have to recreate these animals, themselves being in animals' interiors. This is what had bothered them. They had persevered, however, and were evidently very proud of their achievement, for the noises they had continued to send forth from the mouths of these poor beasts, whatever might be said in respect, you know, of what they've done, lacked not in vigor nor in note of complete satisfaction. That all was well, and also pride in their achievement. You see, my son, being inside, they had no notion that each animal was not as perfect a piece of work as they had willed it to be. Which, however, added greatly to the mirth of us, their seniors, and was also adopted and used later in their own studies to add to their knowledge and skill therein. This is very interesting, is it not? So we're really learning. Very interesting information is being exposed here. We are seeing an aspect of heaven. So, you know, therefore, gathering together in a group, the young spirits, they really did a pretty complex plan. They temporarily dispersed the fountain back into its basic building blocks, universal fluid, and recreated it with their own personalities concealed within the material veneer of the fountain. Now, I've always been a fan of science fiction and fantasy books, but what have you read that where people have this immense power? What fantasy book have you read? I'm sure there's always magicians and there's conjurers and, you know, there's powerful, you know, wizards, but it's like this is beyond anything that most of us can even envision. It's like we're all destined to have this immense power, and now you understand why we have to go through such training on earth. We're not being punished, we're being educated, we're being given a gift. When we have something what we think is, oh my God, it's horrible. And it changes us, right? It changes our personality. It changes our character. That's actually the best thing that could happen to us. We are being taught how to wield power beyond our imaginations. So let me get back to the fountain. So seeing that the time was right, the children inside began to mimic the sounds of the animals. So they were making all sorts of noise. And then, so they finally ended that. So then they started to rematerialize. And Arnell describes this. He goes, the first to go was the alligator. There were five within him concerned in his destruction, and happened to be of the older ones, and so more advanced in the science. So they very quickly dissolved in obedience to their wills. We all stood round the fountain at the basin's rim, awaiting the emergence of these young scientists. Well, as I say, the alligator was the first to go. But when the children stood up free, two boys and three girls, they were... And we all gazed agape for astonishment for a moment. Then realizing the reason of their plight, we fell to laughter, for they are all naked with no rag or stitch upon their wonderful forms. At first they surveyed us with some hesitance, doubting what was amiss. But when they looked at one another, they understood the source of our surprise. Yet although they were perplexed at their appearance, they took heart from our laughter, know that they had come to pass, could soon be remedied. Therefore they joined their laughter to our own. And so having now supplanted us, their elders, in the role of victim, we were quite well content. So again, this tells us is, you know, the onlookers, the teachers, the students were amused. There's no shame in their naked purity. The beautiful form of the human body has no wrong inherited. There's a story of when a man came up to Chico and he held a Playboy magazine, and he held the Playboy magazine open to the, you know, to the fold-out picture, you know, to a naked woman, and because he wanted to get Chico's response. And Chico looked at it, and he looked at the magazine, and he said, God makes everything beautiful, doesn't he? So that's the attitude, right? That's the attitude in the spirit realm. In the spirit world, clothes are just part of a person's character. Each spirit wills the garment they desire. And Arnell tells us that if the children's teachers were just playing in the garden, then then not having any clothing would be perfectly fine. Arnell states that clothes are desired when performing work or leaving your own area. Clothes in the spirit world are a matter of comfort and personal preference. Let me give you an example. In the book, Memoirs of a Suicide, the spirit Camilo Bronco told us, as interpreted by the medium Yvonne Piera, which is a great book. I would tell everybody to read that book. About the time he encountered a beautiful young woman. And she was just, she was blonde. She was about 15 years old. And she was oddly dressed. He said it was a white tunic cinched at the waist and a blue robe worn in the ancient Greek style and a small garland of tiny roses decorated on her brow. And he said, at first, I thought, this is what he wrote. At first, I thought I was a victim of a new type of hallucination, that passing from the valley of the reprobates to the Hope City, because he was the suicide that came up from the lower levels in the umbral, the lower zone. Because I had acquired the gift of creating the opposite of ugly, that is pleasant and beautiful. And the young woman had the poetic and imposing name of Rita Casilla de Forjas Frazeo. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. A name that would have put her in the circle of an aristocratic family in her last existence in Portugal. And, you know, he kept interested in this. And then finally, you know, she was a little bit annoyed, but finally she answered the question. She goes, okay, why do you have this on? And she goes, okay. She says, I was buried like this. That is, they dressed my corpse like this when I left the last time I was incarnate. The return to the invisible, so dear to my heart, in spite of the grief it meant for someone I love very much, that I have retained it in my mind in remembrance of my last earthly garb. Therefore, you wear what you feel you should wear. The appearance of clothes is a function of your mind. When in the spirit world you take away the thought of clothes, your outer garments simply vanish, leaving you in the natural form. And the spirit Arnell, knowing that he was talking to an English Anglican reverend, and that's what he told Jeeva Owen would be published in the 1920s, wished to clarify the episode of the fountain. And this is what he wanted to tell. He said, let me reproduce the scene for you. Here was the fountain in the middle of a pleasance. Around the water's rim were gathered a goodly number of men and maidens with some elders among them. Upon the island stood five children in age 16 or 17 years, and they were naked. Now, probably the first word which such a situation would bring to the mind of ordinary reader in your earth life would be the word shame. Of this, I wish to speak quite clearly and emphatically. There was no blush or thought of shame in the whole company of us on either side of the water. There is no sin here in Sphere 7, where sin is not shame, has no basis, and is not found. We have no prides in Sphere 7. No. When those five saw what had come of their daring experiment in the newly acquired science, they were at first astonished and a little startled. Then they were greatly amused. And then, seeing they were the first to become free of their prison, they smiled and made signs to each other to be silent. Thus they watched for the others to emerge into the light of the day as, one by one, the animals melted into nothingness. And as each party arrived, each child in the same unadorned state, they waited expectant for the look of blank dismay which should betray their minds of their own companions in this misfortune, that they might pass on our amusement to their fellows. Nor were they disappointed. As group after group came forth, there awaited them first a pause and then a burst of laughter, each louder than the last, as the ranks of the emancipated were reinforced by those more laggard from time to time. When at last they were all free, some 50 or more of them, then all the elder children took the little ones by hand and all waded the water and came to our side. Arnell explained that the effort to dematerialize out of the fountain was so strenuous for the children that they did not have enough residual mental faculties to spare one thought to retain their outer garments. Plus, Arnell wanted to stress the point that our earthly prudishness has no place in heaven. Our guilt over naked bodies, our embarrassment of showing flesh, is not a factor for a mature spirit. The spirit realm, and most certainly God, desires each of us to be kind, gentle, and loving creatures. Feeling shameful with our bodies or the unclothed bodies of others is a sentiment to be left behind. It is basically unimportant and has no bearing of who a person is and the goodness and love which is present in an individual's soul. It tells us a lot. It tells us a lot about heaven, does it not? It's not some religion's idea that, you know, we have to be completely clothed, we have to be hidden from each other, that, you know, our physical body is sinful, as, you know, shameful, I should say. It's our attitude, our character, our love for each other, in our deeds, right? And we're here to improve our character and try to enforce habits to do good deeds, not negative deeds. And it just shows you that life is love and compassion and understanding in the spirit realm, right? We are on earth to learn to feel the same in our physical state. It is difficult given the conditions in which we must work and live in, but it can be done with mental training and discipline. We should strive to take heart the touching and amusing scenes supplied to us by the spirit Arnel, a place where souls support each other, are amused and not critical of trivial outward appearances. Arnel afforded us one more small glimpse of the life awaiting us in the heavenly spheres. To walk among vibrant gardens with exotic displays of movable sculptures, right? Frescoes, to interact with good friends, to laugh with all around us, to always feel unashamed and protected. The vision that should be what drives us to work hard to repair the blemishes, as I said before, in our own character. So I hope this helps. I hope this helps everyone really have a glimpse of the higher levels of heaven. This should take what the Reverend G. Val Owen is doing for us, right? And it all started with Allan Kardec again. Anyone interested? This book's in PDF all over. You can find it. I can't tell you how it's changed my life. And why has it changed my life? Let me explain that for a second. What I just talked about here, learning, going from one plateau to the next, graduating amongst the colleges of heaven. How does that affect us here on earth? It should affect us to know a couple things, right? Probably more than a couple. First, we are immortal souls. We've been on this earth. We've been maybe other planets many, many times before. In our immortal existence, our life here on earth is just a slight moment of time, right? You divide, let's say we live to 80, you divide 80 into infinity, you get a very small percentage, actually zero, but let's say, you know, you get very small percentage of our life here is on earth. Why are we on earth? Spiritism tells us. And it's not just spiritism. I mean, there's other religions, other doctrines that tell you these things. So I don't want to make a sense that we know something that more than other people. What I think spiritism does is it's really giving you something more to hold on to, right? Because, you know, Buddhism talks about reincarnation, but it doesn't talk about the process. The process of exactly what's going on, right? There's many visions of heaven. But the visions of heaven that are being brought to us by spirits is telling us, you know, things that we can know. It's like being a high school student, say, and then talking to your older brother who went to the college, and he says, okay, this is what the college is like. Instead of just like some you know, fuzzy ideal of what a college is like, you're actually being told by what heaven is like and what is there in heaven. And in the books by G. Val Owen, is you're being told, and by other spiritual writers, you know, Chico Xavier, etc. You're being given this knowledge, and you're being given this knowledge now, like that we're immortal, that we have to keep learning, that we're here on earth to become perfect, right? To become better, not perfect in one life. What we're being told this, and and why are we being told this? Because we are at a civilizational point that we can understand what is being told to us. Not all of us, but many of us. One of the things that we've been told, and in fact, I think it was in the Gospel According to Spiritism, I can't remember which of Allan Kardec's, is that we've been told that if you look at the first revelation, which was Moses, and you read the Old Testament, a lot of it is you are going to go do this or you're in trouble, right? You're going to follow these orders or you're going to, you know, go to that town and kill everybody. And it sounds like, oh, this is pretty mean, right? But you have to remember is the spirit world talks to the human race on the level that they can understand. And in the New Testament, it was more love. Okay, here's love, right? They couldn't tell us about everything because people couldn't accept it yet. Now, in the third revelation, Allan Kardec, the codifier of Spiritism, we're being told more. I'm sure there's a lot more for them to tell us, but we're not ready for it. But we're being told what they think is ready. So now we can understand, okay, now we have the sophistication to okay, there is, okay, is, and we also understand, and, you know, the physicists understand there's more dimensions. There's things we can't see. There's all sorts of things we can't tell. They talk about string theory. They think there could be 11 or more dimensions. This is the talk about different dimensions and different areas that you can see and not see, and space is full of life. It's not a vacuum, which was just only recently said in string theory, that there is no such thing as vacuum. It was all in the books by Allan Kardec in Genesis. If you read Genesis, it will tell you. It actually foreshadows string theory. You know, you have to read it carefully, but it foreshadows string theory. So they're telling us these things because they're telling us, okay, why do we live on a planet that what we think in our, you know, if we live on this planet and we are, and of course I understand it because I still sometimes feel the same way, but I felt the same way even more before I discovered Spiritism, is, you know, these terrible things happen to us. And oh my God, stress at job, stress doing this, I don't make enough money. But it's not, there's no punishment, right? It's all educational, right? It's edifying. And when something bad happens to us, even if it's an illness, it's done for a reason. It's done for a reason to make, what they say is pain and suffering is a great teacher, right? I think I've read that in multiple places in the books by Chico Xavier. Pain is a great teacher. And they also talk about, you know, we are like these, you know, these pottery, right? We have to get into the kiln. And, you know, and you know, be hardened, you know, made perfect by our experiences. Knowing that puts everything we go through in a different perspective. It makes us look at ourselves and others around us differently. We see, okay, oh yeah, I couldn't buy that house. I lost that job. So there must be a reason, right? That person at the job just bugs the hell out of me. Now I know, because it's a couple of things. It could, and you never know. You have to analyze these things. That person at the job that just grates on you could be there to make you come up to another level, right? Because I remember I was in a job that, like, they always had these, whatever I did, it was not good enough. Right? Oh no, you got it. No, this is wrong. And finally, I just, okay. I said, look. I finally said, instead of fighting it and being mad, I just said, look, you can't tell me I'm doing these mistakes. You got to just give me one or two. Let me work on them. And then, you know, you just can't say everything's wrong, because then I give up. And it was actually good, because I think this person was there to actually help bring me up to the next level. And then we worked out wonderful together. So these people who you think are your obstacles to you, or even who do you like harm for some reason, They you have to look at them as your actors in the play, right? They are there for a purpose. And we're so interconnected in all these different things. They're either there in the purpose to bring you to the next level, right? They could be there in the purpose to have you experience what you had done to somebody else. So now you know, oh, I'd never want to have, you know, I don't want to stab somebody in the back. I mean, figuratively, let's say in a company or something, if someone that, you know, got you out of a position. So this is why the spirit world, we're here to learn. And what these glimpses, and what I've talked about in higher education, and about how people create with their minds. Is it's all about being trained to have immense power beyond any. We are. It's when I read somewhere, I think it was Paul, it said that you really need to come to Earth and feel like you are gods, and that because someday you will be like a god. Because you'll have this immense power. You'll be able to create from your mind, right? Isn't that what we think in our own little primitive human way? Is, God creates with his mind, right? And although we kept being told in the spirit world that even they don't understand God. But that's how we should feel, that, these things are happening to us. And that we should try, in our own turn, is to always be fair and look at people and not see what is wrong, but see what is the potential could be. And it's not our job is to write anything. Our job is really to facilitate and help the course and the classes that they're given, right? Because that's why no one to say, oh, I hate that person, I want revenge. Revenge is a waste of time, because whatever that person did or will do will be taken care of in life after life after life. So it really lets you, in my own life as a spiritist, it's like, people do terrible things to me. I guess I deserve that. But I don't hate them, because they're an actor in the play. They're playing a part. They're going through a class. They're doing what was predetermined to them to help them. And what they did to me, somehow, even though I don't feel it at the time, and and I'm not there yet of being calm in all circumstances, it's there to help me too. So my stress level and my harmony level, my stress level is way down. I feel much better. But it's not easy to get here. This is why I've written books. This is why I read everything I can, because it takes a lot of study and work. It's not easy being a spiritist. It takes a lot of study and work. First, you have to intellectualize. Now, it could be different. Different people are different, right? To me, I had to intellectualize everything. I had to go through Allan Kardec's book. I had to go read all of his books. I had to read all sorts of things, and I started understanding it. And then naturally, emotionally, I started to feel the love and fraternity for others. I'm sure a lot of people could feel the love. They've always felt love for others, people unlike me. And then they have to probably do the opposite. Then they have to read about spiritism and understand what that love means. So all of us approach it differently. So I want to thank everybody for being here on our talk. Again, I want to remind everybody, I have a YouTube channel. You can get to the YouTube channel on nwspiritism.com. What I do is I take these, I copy these live streams on Facebook, and I will put that on the YouTube channel. I've also been creating, not very many right yet, but I created a smaller four to 10 minutes, I think one was 15 minutes, explanations of spiritism, and I call it Spiritism Explored and Explained. So I have a small group. I'm going to be doing more of that, explaining different aspects of spiritism. Also on Kardec Radio, I will upload this, so again, that can be shown more. Because remember, on Kardec Radio, it's downloaded on your Apple or your Android device, you can listen to talks like mine and my much better people than me, 24 hours a day. So you have Kardec Radio on Facebook. You have Kardec Radio on your Android on your phone, on your smartphone. You have Kardec Radio on the internet. You can get to, you can look up and download and listen on demand to many different people. And you have nwspiritism.com. You can see articles. And on the right-hand side, you can click on my books. You can also join my Twitter following. Every time I do an article, every day I do one more article and send that out for people on Twitter and also on the Facebook pages. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. And this was, again, a wonderful talk. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope what I said makes sense. I'll start the end credits. I would like to thank everyone for listening to our program on Kardec Radio.
and to point you in the direction to find more information about the spirit world around us. You can visit my blog at www.nwspiritism.com. Again, that is www.nwspiritism.com. And if you are ever in the Northwest, I certainly would welcome to have you come to our meeting on Bainbridge Island near Seattle in the state of Washington. Many blessings to all of you, and please continue to explore spiritism and the spirit world around us.